and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who needs no introduction. All right, let's get going with the pod. No, sorry. Hey, welcome back, Chris Kelly. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me back, Mark.
We had a good time on the Strangers Pray at Night pod, so we're like, hey, let's bring Chris Kelly back.
I did have a really good time with that, and that was a movie I would not have normally watched, so thank you very much for recommending that.
That pool scene's getting lots of love.
Yeah, every time I show that movie to someone, they always say that that's the scene that stands out the most to them, because they look at the vivid colors and everything like we pointed out, mm-hmm. and they just go, there's no way that they think that the kid is going to kill the masked guy, and then, you know.
Yeah.
Knife in the back, and then just everybody gets shocked every time they see it. I'm like, yeah, that's a great movie.
It's a good scene. And I like that. It was weird, though. I saw on Twitter the other day, some guy's like, I don't really like Strangers Pray at Night, but I like the pool scene. Like, I don't know why he said it like that. But I was like, why don't you just say I like the pool scene? I don't know. The guy was kind of complaining about it on Twitter, but so he had to put his opinion on there. But I'm like, yo, dude, just embrace it.
Out of like the hour and 40-minute movie, they like the nice 10 minutes. It's like, just talk about the great 10 minutes if you didn't like the other parts. But I mean, there's a lot of part of that I really enjoy. But
you know what we didn't talk about, and I wanted to run by you? During that movie, you know what? You've worked on sets with the practical effects guys, right? Mm-hmm. The special effects.
Of course.
I would have loved to have been the Tube of Death Wrangler on that movie. Because you know how much like smoke there was and fog?
Yeah.
I mean, that really helped the lighting. Like, it helped practically light it.
But I can imagine.
Everywhere you looked, there must have been a tube of death. Like,
oh, gosh,
running everywhere.
I mean, you can, especially whenever the truck's driving, there had to have been at least a good, like, oh, gosh, like 50 yards of a tube coming out that way. And, I mean, I can't even imagine the budget spent on that alone. Out of a $5 million film, like, well, thank God we're in Kentucky because we get this, you know, half price.
Yeah, this tube of death is really saving us. Now, a tube of death, it's basically just a long tube of plastic sheeting, correct? That they blow, correct, they pump, and they blast air into it so it fills up a tube. And they just pump like fog or smoke into
it.
Yeah,
you can get that
whatever substitute. Dry ice. Who knows?
They're more popular to buy around Halloween time, but it's basically the same stuff.
And then you just have a bunch of guys on set, special effects guys who do the practical ones. They all look surly. They've all been in the industry for about 40 years, and every single one of them worked on The Evil Dead for some reason. Thousands of them worked on The Evil Dead.
Those credits on that movie, though, does not.
Yeah, it never stops.
It's longer than Wes Craven's New Nightmare credits.
I was on Evil... I met 75 people who worked on Evil Dead. But yeah, so I mean, on that movie, though, I wish we would have dropped that, though, because we've worked on movies with fog before. I did a movie, a TV show called Resurrection. We were always using that stuff.
Oh, yeah, and especially remember when we did The Hunger Games. It was constantly pumping in there.
There's tubes of death everywhere. On this movie, though, that's all they did. Like,
there was a lot of it. I didn't even think of that until now that you brought that up. Because it's like, I mean, you got to imagine. I mean, it's an open area. If they're pumping that, they have to use a lot more. Uh-huh. And then it's a thicker smoke and... Ah, gosh, I didn't even think of that.
But it also really helped practically light everything because it helps light, which is really kind of cool.
Smooths everything out, makes it look a little more dreamlike almost.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I don't know, that's another reason why I like that movie, but I wish I would have done the Tube of Death on that because I would have made bank. You'd be there at 24 because you'd have to Tube of Death it beforehand,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd have to keep it going.
And then whenever they have to move cameras, they have to move that too. Yep. So you know you're always going to be there constantly moving and working.
Yeah, that movie would have been 45 minutes longer. But they had to spend most of the money on the smoke.
It was originally supposed to be as long as Ben-Hur.
Yeah. There was an intermission. That pool scene was 30 minutes long.
There was a chariot race, actually. Strangers.
No, golf cart race. Because we're in a trailer park.
The trailers are blowing up, and then they're flying through in the golf carts.
Yeah, and they were driving around the pool for a half hour in golf carts.
The guy jumps out and does a light jog and catches up to the other golf
jumps cart. On the back, and then he crashes it in the water. Right? And then they have to chase each other back and forth. And they play Marco Polo.
Then there's more smoke in the pool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just seeping out. It was Ben-Hur length. but the Tube of Death really... I think it worked better, though. Keeping it the 90 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, as you know, you find out whenever you watch movies that they really put more into it. And then you're like, this could have taken another hour out of this movie. Magnolia comes to mind. That movie is just extremely too long. Even Paul Thomas Anderson said that in an interview on WTF, that if he could go back in time, he would take an hour out of Magnolia.
I mean, he was young then. Was his 90s. He was fresh off, Boogie Nights?
Yeah.
And so he probably had that auteur... He was in his early 30s, wasn't he?
he was 26 when he did Boogie Nights, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe 27. So he would have been like almost 30.
Yeah, so I guess what, Magnolia was still in 99, right?
99, yeah.
So then, I think I saw Boogie Nights when I was 15, so that means I was like 97. Yeah. So he was in his late 20s, so he was pretentious. Oh, like, of course, he wasn't there yet. Like,
I've read a lot of interviews with different crew members that were working on, and, you know, famously Burt Reynolds, whenever he said that he did not get along with Paul Thomas Anderson at all, and he hated the subject matter and still hated the movie up until he died.
Wow. So
he really had a serious grudge against him for that movie.
What he did, though, in his 20s, Paul Thomas Anderson's unbelievable.
Oh, gosh. Even in his 30s with There Will Be Blood.
Oh, and I think Phantom Fred was beautiful. That guy makes some great movies.
I have yet to see that.
Oh, it's so good.
I've been wanting to see that for so long, but I'm waiting for it to get on some type of streaming service if it's not on already.
The same thing, this is going to sound really weird, but the crazy thing about Paul Thomas Anderson movies is that you have to really watch them. Like, there's some movies you can put on, like, so we're busy guys. And so you can put on certain movies in the background and, like, you can devote other attention to other work or, you know, cleaning your house and stuff.
Yeah, but
when you watch a PTA movie,
you really do have to invest the time into it. Very much like, specifically, The Master.
Oh,
I had to watch that like 3 times and I was just like, I still have yet to like fully feel like I've seen the whole movie. It's just very intricate.
That performance by Joaquin Phoenix is the closest thing I can get to like feral. He was like a feral creature in that movie. I loved it.
It was that scene in the beginning where he's like, he's a photographer and he's like, you need to straighten your tie. And then he like starts choking the guy out. And then he like starts throwing like, well, you know, perfume bottles at him and everything. I read that Joaquin Phoenix actually wired his mouth shut so that he could have like more of like a kind of like a hardened voice, which if you watch the movie, he definitely has more like a, like his mouth never opens at all.
Jeez, it's just visual delight. The problem is you watch The Master. I loved it, but then I didn't really want to watch it again because it was such a such like an in-depth experience.
Yeah,
I didn't.
It's like how I felt when I don't know if you saw this, but Beautiful Boy.
Is that what just came out? Steve Carell?
Yeah. It's about the writer, I can't remember his first name, but his last name's Neff, who famously did an interview with John Lennon and Yoko Ono 3 weeks before John Lennon was shot. But it's about how his son was addicted to drugs and everything from heroin to meth and whatnot. And it's a very, very hard movie to watch. The other day, I decided to, like, I was just looking at movies to watch. It was like 10 in the morning. And I was like, I wanted to see this because I saw commercials for it. I put it on. That was not a very wise choice. It's kind of like, we're gonna go out drinking. Let's put in Requiem for a Dream. Yeah. And then I watched it. It was a beautiful movie, very great performances, but I just was like, wow, I'm probably not going to watch that movie ever again. I've only seen Requiem for a Dream, I think, twice.
Yeah.
For me to watch it again, I'll definitely have to be in a certain mood.
Man, I don't think I could. You know what's crazy? I saw Requiem for a Dream in 2002.
Ooh.
That's it. So for a while, I was trying to catch up on movies, and because I had the Netflix where you could rent 3 at a time, mm-hmm. the DVDs. And one day I had Clockwork Orange, I had Requiem for a Dream, and another just face puncher. And I watched all 3 of them back to back to back. And I was like, I need to get out. I need sunlight, but it was dark out. So I was like, I need to do something.
So you retreated to your closet with a bottle of whiskey.
Quietly, drank some Dewars in my room with a cigarette dropping ash on me. You know, they say this, like, movies, that really mess with me. Oh, watching those movies back to back to back.
I don't think I could probably go from Requiem for a Dream to Clockwork Orange without having to go for a nice long break.
Yeah.
Unless I never saw Clockwork Orange, or if I have seen Clockwork Orange before. And I saw that movie in college. It was hosted by the Film Academy for Penn State. And the film professor gave a 2-hour introduction prior to showing Clockwork Orange. So we talked about it for about 2 hours, showed a 2.5-hour movie, did a Q&A afterwards. So it started at 8. When everybody was done, it was around midnight.
That sounds terrible.
It was not a very good Friday night.
I want to do that for Deep Blue Sea. So I'm teaching at a school right now, but I'd love to get a big university job and just do a lecture on Deep Blue Sea, show Deep Blue Sea, and then do a Q&A about it.
Oh my gosh! That's one of those movies that's just you either get it or you don't. And it's
like, I think Clockwork Orange is the same. We just compared Deep Blue Sea to Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, well, they're both came from books. both very much about free choice.
Yeah. You know, really great. You know, they really speak on our culture and just like what we absorb as far as TV and celebrity. I think Deep Blue Sea touches on that.
And dynamite soundtracks.
Yeah. So, speaking of dynamite soundtracks, wow.
That was a good one. That was a great lead-in.
I bought this soundtrack for the guests. And do you have this soundtrack?
Of course. Yeah. It's on my Spotify.
I watched this movie. I think that's the first good transition I've ever done on this. Normally, I'd be like, yeah, so Kurt Russell was in Backdraft. I'm like, speaking of that, our topic for the week is
Gone with the Wind. Yeah,
is Unfriended, Dark Web. People are like, what? But yeah, so we're going to talk about the guest. You were actually here, and we were looking at my movies, because where we record, and I was like, I want to talk about the guest. And you're like, I love the guest.
Oh, it's one of my favorite films, yes.
I've actually been wanting to pot about this since I saw it back in, 2015? And so this is directed by Adam Wingard. Wingard, he did Your Next. He also did the Netflix Death Note. He did Blair Witch. And then he also did some things on the VHS.
He did Amateur Night on VHS. That was actually filmed in the Virginia Highlands here in downtown Atlanta.
That's with the vampire girl.
Yeah. I mean, she did a spinoff, I guess, called Siren. So yeah. They never actually say what she is, but
something.
That's probably the best segment out of VHS. I mean, VHS in general is very good, but that's probably the best.
They started it really strong.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, and VHS 2, he also did Phase 1, The Chronicle Trials, which is the one where he gets the eye implant, but he starts seeing dead people. Or are they dead? I don't know if they're ghosts. They don't really explain. You know what I'm talking about? That's the first segment.
All I remember in VHS 2 is the one with the zombies, the first person one on a GoPro.
That was so good.
And then Gareth Evans one in the temple with the cult. Holy crap.
Oh gosh, that one's bonkers. I mean, like that scene where he's like, don't talk or don't speak. And then he's just like, are you doing okay? And he's like, I thought I told you. Jumps over the table, pulls out the box cutter and cuts the guy's throat. Oh, it's like, whoa. And then they're being chased by like some demon.
I love that.
That was a great, great segment. That one doesn't get too much love for some reason. I don't know why. That one's a really good one.
I try to promote as much as possible. And the co-director on that directed... He directed the movie on Netflix, which is called The Night Comes for Us. I don't know if you've watched it on Netflix.
No, but I've seen it.
Starring Joe Taslim.
I've seen it pop up.
I haven't watched it, but I've seen it. starring Joe Taslim and Iko Uwe. And it's like an action movie made by a horror director. It's the bloodiest thing you'll ever see. And it's glorious.
Oh, it's like when Takashi Miike.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Like 13 Assassins or Blade of the Immortal. Like bodies fly everywhere.
What was the movie? What was it? Dead or Alive?
I haven't watched that one with him.
Golly, that one was ridiculous. It's like, and it's just like people die in the most disgusting and violent ways. Like, where did he come up with this? And like, up next, Ichi the Killer. You're like, oh my God.
Imagine watching Ichi after Clockwork Orange. And like,
that was the third movie.
Oh yeah.
That was the third punch
audition,
in the
audition, yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, God, audition.
And then, so this one, The Guest, was also written by Simon Barrett. He also did Your Next, and he's writing the I Saw the Devil American remake, based on one of my favorite Korean, I guess, slasher horror revenge films.
I've been meaning to watch that for so long, because I remember you told me to watch that. I think, what was it, like 3 years ago?
Yeah, it's so good.
I've every time I go to look at it, go to click on it, I always go, oh look, oh here's Black Fist,
Transformers 5,
whatever Shia LaBeouf just did. But we can't leave away with Simon Barrett. He did write Frankenfish.
Yep. He wrote Frankenfish?
He did, and it was directed by Mark Dipp, who also directed Spawn.
I think I did see, I did watch Frankenfish.
Right? The 2004?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the one that had a decent budget. It was a direct-to-TV or DVD.
It was like a $3 million budget. It was definitely a big-budget Sci-Fi Channel original movie.
And it wasn't like the normal ones you think about with Bruce Campbell or Ghost Sharks. Like it was a budget.
Ghost Shark. Remember that one where the shark comes up through the bathroom?
Sand Sharks. Yeah, but it's like a real movie. Frankenfish.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was one of the more better ones. And that was, I think that's where he got his start, was kind of writing more like slapstick kind of ridiculous concepts, which is like, I mean, Frankenfish. I mean, you got to think about like with Amateur Night. That is a ridiculous concept. It is seriously made, but it is a ridiculous concept that happens. And same thing with The Guest. It is a rather ridiculous concept.
I love it though. And so I listened to the commentary. I want to drop some kind of knowledge on you before we get going into it. This is their first union shoot. So, you know, they did Your Next.
I did not know that.
You know, Your Next is like a mumblecore improv. Their friends were involved. You know, Ty West is in it. A bunch of different directors.
Joe Swanberg.
Joe Swanberg, yeah.
Wendy Glenn, who plays the woman who just brutally murders everybody, all the attackers.
And, she, you know, we had people that were in, like, Upstream Color, like, mumblecore.
Yeah, it was like, a very mumblecore, not very seriously taken, seriously done film.
Sharni Vinson was awesome in that movie. She blended it into his head.
That's so good. that end where it's just like, well, how's she gonna top the, like, she just smoked everybody. Blender on the head. was it Joe Swanberg that runs out of the house and she's like, no, and then the piano cord cuts the guy's throat. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that, like, you know what's an interesting story? They were working on this movie when that was released in theaters, and Lionsgate kept going, yeah, you know, we're getting the box office receipts, we'll keep you updated. Well, it's not doing too well. Oh, it might do well better. Well later. And it kind of tanked, you know, its opening weekend. And they're like, oh, great. But then Tarantino was there. He loved it. So they got some good news, at least, while they were working on this.
I just remember whenever that movie came out, a friend of mine worked at a theater. His roommate worked at a theater. And then they put a gigantic movie theater size poster that was like the size of a wall of Your Next in their bathroom. So whenever I went to his house and had to go to the bathroom, there was this gigantic fox mask standing there. I'm like, what is this movie?
All right, so this is going to sound really random, but if you listen to the Snowmobile Pod, which we just did about Icebreaker, we had this long conversation about Avril Lavigne Avril Lavigne songs being directed by, like, Catherine Bigelow, Alexander Payne. We had a long discussion. But in my bathroom, in my college house, I was walking around like a Walmart one night and I saw a poster of Avril Lavigne. I just laughed at it. So I put that in my bathroom. So whenever people walked in, they had like the sliding door. They went, what? Just like Avril was looking at them. So that's like, you know, if you listen to that pod, I just thought that was funny. Like, speaking of, like, posters and bathrooms.
Why'd you have to go and make everything so complicated?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you're gone.
That's right. I mean, but I just love seeing people's reactions. They'd be like, what?
Like, you have a casualties poster in your living room and then Avril Lavigne.
So this is kind of cool because they shot in New Mexico. They wanted to shoot it in the Pacific Northwest, like give it like a Green Room style vibe. I don't know if you've seen Green Room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they wanted to give it that kind of vibe. But they looked at tax incentives because this is a $5 million movie, which is a fortune to them because they had never shot anything that big. So they decided to go to New Mexico and they thought it was cool. Like, this is like a Halloween movie that takes place in the desert. Like, it's during Halloween. It's not about... It takes place around that time. It's not a Halloween movie.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you said Eyes Wide Shut is a Christmas movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they thought it'd be cool to do, like, a Halloween setting in the desert. Because you never really see that. Like, you don't really... So, like, you think trick or treat in
you
the
usually
suburbs.
Think suburban green grass and kids running around. Exactly. Yeah, I never thought of that.
So that's, I thought really that was really cool. And also, you know what's interesting is these guys... One of my favorite things... I want to hear what you have to say about it. So, in the commentary... one of my, like, what the director said, Adam said, he's like, if you're having a good time on set, something is wrong. He said that in the commentary, which that makes a lot of sense.
There's definitely, I've
enjoyed myself sometimes on sets, but there's a lot of stress. So let's say they're like, Mark, I need these 40 cars on set now.
I only found 33 of the guys.
Exactly.
Like,
six of them aren't working. You know, like, Mark, we need 3 dirt bikes. And you see, like, the crew guys working on all the dirt bikes. And you're like, there aren't any ready. Or get the monsters ready. And 4 of them are ready out of the 30. Like, it's just, it's thrilling when you get it right. And when you work, it's a collaborative experience. But it's never, I don't think I've ever had fun. Like, it's fun, but it's also... been very stressful for me.
It's like a stressful fun.
Yeah.
Good time.
It's exhilarating.
That's probably that's a good way to put it. I never thought.
But if someone's like, hey man, you want to come work on my movie? It's going to be perfect. I'm like, no.
I know what that means.
But if Adam's like, hey, come work with me. It's going to be a pain in the ass. Like, we're trying some new things. I'm new at this. I'll be like, I'm with you.
That's generally whenever you get hired for a film, they do say something like that. Like, it's going to be, you know.
It's going to be a shit show.
It's like, it's a 60-day shoot, you know, 30 days or overnight. So that way, you know, automatically going into it, it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to have a lot of days that are going to be overnight. And
I'm not going to say the movie, but I signed up for a movie, signed all the contracts, got my badge, got all my paperwork done. And they're like, yeah, it's out of town and it's nights. I was like, what?
By the way, it's in Florida.
I think I let you.
Like, Mark, wait, what?
You are going to Mexico. Like, what? I got punched right in the gut, and I was like, oh. But, yeah, that wasn't cool. And then, you know, I was like, screw this. I was like fighting the system. So after every night when we wrapped, I would drive home and I'd get like 3 hours of sleep and drive back. Cause I'm like, I'm not staying in this stupid hotel room. They didn't pay me for this. So I was sleep deprived, you know, stubborn and like work. So I was like, I'm no one's fool.
That's like when I did a movie, that was, about like an hour and a half away from where I live in Atlanta. And they didn't tell me where it was going to be. So then I did it. And then they were like, it's going to be a 12-day shoot. And I was like, oh, that's not that bad. I can do this for 12 days. About day five.
Dude, you're done.
Like, can I have a hotel? And they're like, oh, it's not in the budget. And you're like, oh, come on. It's not in the budget. Like, well, we can take you. Like, oh, you know, we can't tell you not to get a hotel room for yourself. I'm like, oh, come on. It's like, it's an hour and a half away from Atlanta. And when they say Atlanta, they don't, they're just like, well, we say Atlanta, by Atlanta, we mean the Athens. Airport.
Yeah.
It's like, what the?
And you're working 14 hour days. Let's say you're doing a 3 hour round trip, 17 hours. You get home, you fiddle around.
Of course.
And then you wake up, you probably need an hour and a half there. So you're getting 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah. At the maximum. Yeah.
But that's what these guys said on this. They weren't sleeping much. Also, they said something really funny. During this time, Transcendence was there, which is that big budget Johnny Depp movie.
Oh, gosh.
And then also A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was Texas.
No, well, I guess they were shooting in New Mexico, okay. Certain yeah. scenes. And they kept saying that since they couldn't pay as much.
Oh, gosh.
People would keep leaving. People kept leaving their shoot. And then they have to bring in new people. So they couldn't keep the same crew because people are like, oh, I got a week on Transcendence. You know, deuces.
Yeah.
They would take off because they made more money. It's a bigger shoot. Yeah. And so they kept losing people. And it's really interesting in this because the directors, Adam and Simon, or the director-writer, they were just talking about how it was just really tough. Like, they weren't used to generators. You know? And so it was pouring on houses and you couldn't record. Or the generator would blow. Or they couldn't get certain shots. Or there was noises. And so this was like their first... They had done movies before, but they hadn't done anything on this scale. It's like you're good at making mug brownies, right? But then they're like, bake us a gourmet cake. Does that make sense? Like,
oh gosh, that sounds terrible.
So but what I like about them is they weren't. Oh, this was perfect, man. This set was great. Like they were
really telling you the nitty gritty of it. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense because especially like if they're used to making more like low budget things, you know, like very guerrilla style. And then they're like, oh, it rained, so now this scene has rain in it. And they're like, no, this scene is not supposed to have rain in it, according to the producers. And you're like, okay, so what do we shoot now? And it's like, well, I guess we can move to the gym scene.
Yeah.
And it turns out the gym scene has a metal roof. And you're like, no, it's still raining.
And so they said they learned a lot. And they also did a shoot where they had there's a scene in this where there's a bar fight and they trail these people to the bar. They had only 2 days to shoot that.
Wow.
They didn't really...
That scene was shot in 2 days.
Yeah. So, I mean, they didn't really... I think this was a good learning experience for them, which they took into other things. But it's really... I know we're not talking about the movie. We're talking about the production. But if you've seen the movie, if you haven't watched The Guest, you're not listening.
Yeah, to be fair.
But I thought this was kind of cool. So this is like the commentary was really... I can let you borrow it if you want. It's about just the... It was just neat listening to the evolution of these director-writer on this bigger movie, their first union shoot.
Gosh, I would like to hear a commentary on, was it The Sacrament?
Yeah, oh yeah.
That was shot in Savannah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Man, did you like The Sacrament?
I really did. Whenever I listened to your podcast on it, I was like, you have got to be kidding me.
I hate you!
Hoffmeyer!
I gave that movie everything I had, too. Like, I didn't do it as a background, and it just...
Look, I gotta say this about The Sacrament.
I understand why you like it.
If you didn't know what the Jonestown Massacre is, I don't know where you've been for the last 40-something years. So... Yeah. Like, watching the movie, like, right off the bat, like, just seeing the front cover of it, I immediately knew it was the Jonestown Massacre. I mean, everything just screams it. And I knew it was going to happen, but it was still so very weirdly made. And I love that, like, how they were all separated, and then the girl sneaks into the bunk, and then it's just,
yeah.
It's very, I liked it a lot. I mean, there was apparently a different ending. Apparently, what was it, they get away, or... They get away, I think, but no, like the ending that we do see is, you know, the plane gets shot, the helicopter gets shot.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I like about this, you know, Adam Wingard, you have Joe Swanberg, you have Ty West. These guys are doers, and I would never say I'm jealous, but I really respect how they do. Like, these guys made movies happen. You know what I mean? They just have a collective of people, and they... make movies.
And they make good ones,
yeah.
too. Like, I mean, one of the ones I think that's what I was about to say.
Dude,
that movie was phenomenal.
That's a movie right there.
I don't know how that movie didn't become more popular.
So back to The Guest. and we're back. So I just really thought that was neat with this movie, how they, you know, they went to New Mexico. They wanted to have like a kind of a Halloween vibe in kind of like the desert. Also, what was another interesting thing, you know, a lot of this movie was based around Dan Stevens being jacked. So,
and he was used to being seen as either kind of really chubby, and then he was really skinny, kind of like the Machinist, yeah. Christian Bale skinny when he did Walk Among the Tombstones, yeah. which was a really great movie.
Really good. And you know, that guy from Stranger Things was in it too. The police, not the police chief, he's the new Hellboy.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I can't remember.
This is horrible. His name. I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, he was in it. Yeah, I liked Walk Among the Tombstones a lot.
Yeah, he played the killer. He has a great scene at the end where he's like tying up the guy, and it's like, whoa, how is this gonna work out? And
dude can act.
Oh yeah, he's got range.
So, and you know what's interesting is Downton Abbey. When I heard, so I'm a Downton Abbey fan. I love that show. And there's a movie come out in 2019. Can't wait for that. But so he was kind of like this, a posh aristocratic love interest. You know, he got killed off. But then I see him in The Guest and Walk Among Two. I'm like, what happened? But when he went to The Guest, he was too skinny, so he worked out all through the shoot, and so his shirtless scene, it was at the end.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is he had to stop eating 24 hours before, as in the commentary, and then he drank, chugged a Coke, did a ton of push-ups, and then they did that shirtless scene of him.
He looked great.
Yeah.
He shaved all of his body hair off and then went to a tanning salon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and just for that one shot, just to kind of promote, but that was featured everywhere in the movie.
Of course, yeah, I mean, that was the first thing I thought of.
Like, that was like, just like, oh, hey, we got Jack Dan Stevens. And I was like, wait, what? But they hadn't seen Dan Stevens. He got cast for, it's pretty interesting that he got, I don't think they even watched Downton Abbey. They just wanted to kind of counter cast, and they got him. But this role worked really well for him.
It's definitely, you wouldn't expect him to be this type of character, because he looks very welcoming. I mean, his big blue eyes, I mean, he just looks very handsome and like welcoming to people. And he's very polite, even whenever he's being rude, like that one scene, which I love that so much. Whenever, what's her name? The girl.
Micah.
Whenever she discovers that Dan is not who he, or David doesn't actually exist.
Anna.
He's been killed. And then she tells her parents about it, and he's like, well, you know, that's military intelligence for you. But here's my dog tags to show you who I am. I don't like wearing them because, you know. And it's like, okay. And then, all right. And then, you know, the parents believe him, because who are they going to believe, the adult or the child? And then she runs off to her bedroom, and then he knocks on the door, walks in, and he's talking to her. He's like, you know, basically telling her, like, shut up. It's like, and the whole scene, he gets like it's got to be within inches of her face, and he's just like, do we understand each other? And she's like in tears, and he's like, good. And then he gets up, walks out. He's like, is this that mix CD you made for me? I'm looking forward to listening to this. And you're like, oh my goodness, this guy is just like, that scene is, there's so much you could cut the tension with a knife.
He crushed it.
And unbelievable.
So
bar fight scene.
Oh yeah.
Whenever I showed this movie, I've always pitched that scene to everybody, because it's just, it's great. Because the first time I watched this movie was with a friend of mine, and we were watching the scene, and she goes, why would he order that drink for himself? And I said, that's mace. Yep. She was like, no, that's disgusting. And like, maybe he's trying to show that he's like an alpha male. I'm like, no, he's gonna throw that at someone. I guarantee it. And lo and behold, you know, I love that scene. He's just like, I want cosmopolitans for all the guys.
Yeah, and blowjob shots.
Blowjob. That's a great move. And then they throw the drink at him, and he just chucks the Tabasco and Fireball in the guy's face. And it's like, oh God, that guy is out for the count. And then he breaks the guy's leg. That whole scene, and then that, just that moment whenever the guy had, remember, the bartender has the bat, and he's like, you know, he thinks he's next. He's like, don't even try.
Yeah.
And then he just looks at the two guys who are sitting in the bar who haven't even moved. I mean, they look like they've been drinking in bars their entire lives. Yeah. So they're probably like, oh, I saw this back in 74.
Again.
Yeah. Dang it, Dan.
And just as long as they're not bothered, they're fine.
Oh, yeah. And he looks at the guys, says, why don't you get out? They're like, okay. They get up and go, and the bartender looks like he's going to hit him with a bat. And he's like, all right, you know, let's do this. He's like, no, how about, here's a couple $100, and why don't you tell them, you know, why don't you call the cops and tell them that some underage kids came in here, got a little drunk. And they're like, how are you supposed to know? They had these fake IDs. You don't know the difference between the real ones and the fake ones, you know? And he's just like, shit.
Yeah. I love that line when he goes, money's easy to get.
Yeah. Like, where did you get this roll of $100 bills? And he just has that grin.
Money's easy to get. So what I do like is, so this movie, Wingard wanted to make a Terminator meets Halloween. The movie's Terminator meets Halloween. Ooh. Hybrid. And so that's when he talked to Simon, and then they made this movie. And we're gonna spoil everything, of course. We always do, but not in a bad way. We're just gonna give away stuff. But so I like that this movie, so David, the plot is this guy David, you see him running in the beginning. He runs to this home where there's this family who lost their son in Iraq. And he comes back. He's like, I was a friend with your son. And he kind of ingratiates him. Is that the word? He becomes integrated into their lives.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he doesn't like, it seems like he would, like, by retelling the movie, though, it almost sounds like he forces himself in, but he doesn't. Yeah, they bring him in.
Stay with us. He's like, I'm going to stay at a motel.
Yeah.
And no, you're staying with us. I'm going to catch a bus tomorrow. No, stay with us for a couple days.
And then they, after the couple of days, they're like, stay a couple more days.
Exactly.
Everything seems to be going really well for this family.
And what I love, though, is there's a line in this movie where he says that, let me find this. So he's basically coming to this family. I believe, so he's a super soldier. He was in some program and he escaped.
KPG.
Yeah, KPG. And he has a KPG sweater on, like the logo, when he walks into the house.
That's Adam Wingard's fake thing, kind of like Kevin Smith's nail cigarettes or Quentin Tarantino's Apple brand cigarettes.
I love that. Because You're Next, that's in it as well, right?
You're Next. And also, briefly with Blair Witch, the drone that they use is from the KPG.
Oh, that's awesome. So United Universe. So he comes back, but what I do like is, so he knew the son. They were probably friends. Then he went away to become this kind of super soldier. And so when he goes to this house, there are some theories that he just wanted to help them. Like he wanted, so he's like, I wanted to help. I considered it my mission to assist you all while I was here. There were just too many complications. And then he has neurological conditioning that designed him to protect both him and the experiment. If he feels like his identity may be compromised, he's programmed to clean up all loose ends. I doubt he could stop himself even now if he wanted to. So this guy, he kind of went to help this family. But his way of helping is murdering the dad's boss so then he gets a promotion. Framing the girl's boyfriend, who's Zeke, the guy from John Dies at the End, who's a pothead. he kills the gun dealers to get guns. He beats up bullies. So he's crazy.
Well, he's been programmed. He does help them out.
Yeah.
I mean, he helps them out a lot. It's just... You know, Micah Monroe, she kind of screwed it up.
Because she called. Did. Yeah, she called.
She's the one who called. If she didn't do that, they would all be going, wow, everything's going really well for our family now. You know, the husband is now the boss, which is what he always wanted.
Yeah.
The daughter is probably going to go off to college because she doesn't have her loser boyfriend. And, you know, the son is now standing to stand up for himself. So everything would be going really well if it weren't for that.
And she called, yeah. And I mean, I guess she does the right thing, though, because she has a guy.
But was it the right thing to do?
I think so, because he's
not. It seems like he would have gone on his merry way. But it seems like after about 4 days, he'd be like, all right, well, maybe I'll just mosey on now.
But what if they
do construction work? Because that's what he mentions, that he used to do construction work before the military.
Yeah, I guess he does. He just kills people, though. And she gets he does have a weird vibe. I mean, I think he's just this blonde, good-looking dude. So everyone's like, he's perfectly normal. But there's scenes where, remember when he meets the teenage kid? The brother, he just stares at the kid, played by Brendan Meyer, Luke. He's just staring at him. Like, he's creepy in this movie.
Do you notice that he never blinks?
Yeah, never blinks.
So he never blinks in the whole movie.
And so, I mean, there is a creeper vibe to him. I mean, you know, he carries two kegs, 170 pounds each, that are full. I, like, looked up the kegs and how much. So he's carrying 340 pounds easily. I don't know. I don't know. So I know he makes their lives better, but he does so by murdering people, which...
I mean, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But I like that, though. This is a guy who comes to this place. He wants to help his family, and he does so by pretty messed up means. And then they find out who he is, and then he just kills everyone because that's his programming. But I think that's a cool plot.
It's a great plot. I loved it. And then, of course, it goes with the soundtrack and the amazing cinematography.
Yeah. So the cinematographer...
Robbie Baumgartner.
Yeah, and he had done some pretty good movies before.
He was mainly known for his lighting techniques, and he was a camera op, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On Water for Elephants, and he was the DP for the second unit of The Hunger Games and Battleship.
He worked on Leon, Broken Arrow, Sergeant Bilko, From Hell, 25th Hour, 8 Mile, Babel, Battleship, Argo. But he's worked on a lot of prestige, like There Will Be Blood. he worked on.
And Dead Man on Campus.
This is a guy, I like what they had to say about him, is this was one of his first shots as a DP. So he had been, the gaffer or lighting technician.
As well as that, that would be a nice transition, too, because that way you know how everything should look.
Yeah.
I mean, transitions very well into being a DP.
And I love the shots. I think my favorite on this is, normally I don't like, so you and I are in a conversation, right? So, like, let's say you're looking down at us. Like, so let's say you're doing an overhead view on you and I, and then there's just a camera circling us. Like, you know those kind of shots that people do? That's like the guy in a steady cam walking around us.
Yeah, Tarantino's famous for, yeah, has a couple of those.
And even in the commentary, they felt like Clerks 2 has one. I'm like, why is this here? That's not necessary. But
it's very action-y. Yeah. It's like, there doesn't need to be, unless you're parroting it, like, with Hot Fuzz. I don't see a point.
That's why this one works for some reason, because you can see the changing in expression on David's face. So he kind of becomes kind of menacing during this shot, when like the one that goes around them. So yeah, they really developed some really neat shots for this movie. And I think you could tell that this DP was really hungry, because this is like his first step up.
Yeah, he definitely wanted to show off, and, well, not show off, but I mean, like, prove his stuff, and then that way he could get hired for more.
I think he definitely did.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I loved the way everything looked in it. Remember when we talked about the comparison with Strangers Pray at Night in the pool scene, and then the end scene with the guest, about how the lighting,
mm-hmm,
very similar music too. I think it's actually what Clan of the Zymox is playing during the end of the guest, if I'm not mistaken. If I got that wrong, don't crucify me.
Yeah, don't tweet me.
But no, it was just that was great shots too, especially whenever the beginning, whenever I can't remember his name, but the guy who's in charge of the KBG.
Lance Reddick.
And yes,
Major Carver.
And he has to go through Dr. Loomis. Yeah, he's going through the maze. And he's like, damn it. Like, how am I supposed to get through this thing? And they're just like, left, left, right, left, right. And he's like, the way they integrated him moving as it went from like POV to like, we're following him now and back and forth. And like, I get, normally they wouldn't do that, but it worked. It worked really well. And the jump scares, they were jump scares, but they were only jump scares within the maze. Yeah. So they made sense with the maze.
Organic.
And it looked great. I loved that scene. And then, speaking of the tube of death, I mean, you know, all that smoke in that scene.
A lot of the tube of death. Give me that tube.
What was the scene that, it seemed kind of like most people wouldn't notice this, but anyways, whenever, Mika is looking at the smoke and then you just see it kind of dissipate, but you could tell that there was a special effects guy behind them. Just
that was the director.
What?
Yeah, and he had a,
that's
and
hilarious.
And I think he had a broom, and he called himself out for it. He's like, I yelled action, then I just did a little broom movement.
You can
see, he's like, and it worked out perfect. The director called that out on the commentary.
I was watching that. I was like, oh my gosh, I could just see it. You know, with a big flag just going whoop.
Yeah, flag. Yeah, that's what they use.
You can tell, but it was like, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes with the movie anyways.
And they did that on purpose. And the director, that's funny that you called that out. And also, we were talking about Micah Monroe.
It was a great year for her. Because right after this came out, also came out It Follows.
Exactly.
And that was dynamite. You've been talking about a great horror film.
I love that movie. And I actually figured out how far the creature followed.
Oh, have you read
that? Yeah, that got picked up by like Bloody Disgusting.
I think I did read that.
But what I like about her is she's a really good final girl in this. But then she also pulls off the sarcasm really well. I mean, she's in a small town, almost 21 years old, still working as a waitress, kind of stuck in Arrested Development with her boyfriend. But I liked like the way she can pull off sarcasm. She never came across as unlikable in this. She's not like the brat
in this movie.
She just has a good organic, natural vibe about her. And I think directors, from what I've noticed, she's in Tao. I don't know if you saw it on Netflix. She's a star in that. Maybe she's been a Hot Summer Night she was just in, but she has a very natural vibe.
You believe that type of look.
All right, how about this? Let's take a break, and then we'll talk about the guests some more. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Chris, you wanted to talk about the additional 20 minutes that they originally wanted to put onto this movie. What did you dig up?
Well, they originally did shoot an extra 20 minutes that had more of an explanation of David and who he was and with the KPG. But after kind of like putting it together and then they screen it for people, I mean, we have to realize this movie's already an hour and 40 minutes, maybe even close to an hour 50, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put another 20 minutes onto that, it makes it over a 2-hour film. That's already, I mean, an hour and 40 is already exhausting, especially for this type of film. But to put that on there was a little bit more than what people could handle. And also no one cared.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, do you think it would be a good idea to have, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing it, but as an actual full film, on a regular basis to show this to someone, I personally don't think it would be a very wise decision, because I do like the mystery of it. It's like, who is David? Is his name even David? I mean, it most likely isn't, but I mean, I like the mystery of it.
I mean, I got what the plot was just by watching the movie. Like, it didn't need the extra 20. So, you know what I mean?
Who he is.
Oh, no, we didn't. Because I kind of felt like I knew him. It seemed like he got into this program. Then he got out. He escaped somehow or whatever. And then he went to this family because he made a promise. Things go wrong because of his programming. People go after him. He kills him. Then he escapes. So, that, I don't know. That's enough for me. Like, well, I don't need 20 more minutes explaining who he is.
Of course. But, like, what about, like, how he's emotionless? There's more into that. Like, apparently, like, the original script said that he was injured in Iraq. He had spinal injury, and he was constantly pill-popping, and he wanted more help with this. So he signed up for the KBG program, which they cut the... They severed the pain nerves, or however... I don't know how... Yeah. Obviously, I'm not a doctor.
Yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. They severed that from his spine, so that he couldn't feel anything anymore, and so he had no emotions and no pain, and he could also regulate his own adrenaline, which is kind of like a cool sci-fi idea. It's like, you know, with Crank, you know, he has to constantly be going, but he could regulate his own adrenaline, which explains why he was very emotionless throughout the whole movie, and also he could just get jacked up out of nowhere. Like, what about, you know, the scene with the diner? Whenever he's like, "So was she just here?" And she's like, you know, the what's her name? The waitress.
Yeah,
she just left. And he's like, "Oh, okay." Pulls out the gun, shoots her, then takes two grenades out, throws it in the diner. The thing blows up before anybody even has a chance to think about it. So it's like, that would have been kind of neat to hear an explanation behind that. I think that's an interesting idea. But then again, I'd be okay with watching that once.
Yeah.
And maybe not multiple times viewing it.
I guess if there was a director's cut, that'd be fun.
Yeah,
like, if,
I would be,
you know,
okay
some,
with that.
Some movies add that onto it. But I guess... I love the original Terminator. I love Predator. I love Halloween, The Descent. And you get just enough about these villain or protagonists or antagonists to really like them. Like the Predator, you don't know much about it other than it can heal itself and it's invisible. You don't really know where it's from.
Of course, so, yeah. They have to make a part two.
Yeah. So I just like in The Guest, you kind of know that... I think they gave enough breadcrumbs for me to be really satisfied with it. And I think if there was a director's cut, I'd happily watch it. I just think what you said, a 2-hour plus movie, this wouldn't have worked.
And it's like, you know, it's an action film that's structured like a horror film. Yeah. So it's kind of, it would be more exhausting than anything to just continually watch that. But
and I like being told, shown, not told. So that scene where he's holding the kegs.
That's obviously some body strength. This
a
man
massive
has.
Keg, 170 pounds, one on your shoulder, one you're curling. That shows he's superhuman. He has superhuman strength. And then in the beginning, they showed him running. So he's like, "Yo, you ran all the way from there." Actually, there's some deleted scenes that show where they lived was really open. Like, we're talking in the desert. So the running scenes that they had Micah Monroe driving past him when he was running. And they just showed the expanse of where they lived, like the middle of nowhere. And I thought it was cool, but the directors thought it wasn't really necessary. But they showed that was in the middle of nowhere and him running. But, you know, in the opening scene, you know that he can run far. You know he can carry kegs. You know that he can headshot a dude from 100 yards away.
Yeah, so, that's a great scene.
I guess I really like that because they could have added that in. But I like the trust that they had. Like, hey, we're going to show you what this
guy
is.
We're going to show you that he's obviously a lot better than the average bear.
And then you can infer all that from there. So I dug that. But I mean, I would love to hear the backstory. Like, if there was like a 20-minute clip, I'm down for it. You know, they added the Lance Reddick scenes. Those were reshoots later on when they had to, because the audience was like, we know nothing about this. Because originally Dr. Loomis, Lance Reddick, entered the scene. And everyone's like
who at
is
the
he?
End.
Yeah.
That would have been really weird. Because I mean, out of nowhere, all of a sudden you just see everybody show up and he's like, "Where's David?" And it's like, wait, who are you?
Exactly.
It's like when you watch The Room. Who is this guy?
Wait, who's this new actor? And why does this lady have a thing on her neck?
And why does he care?
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was pretty neat that they had to reshoot that scene with all the government agencies. Like, oh, I need a flight there tonight. They reshot that to explain more. So
that makes more sense.
Yeah.
And then I guess if they did integrate more of the KPG, that would have just been too much of an overload. Mm-hmm. It would have been like, well, what movie am I watching here?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what's really supposed to be happening. But apparently the original script was a more serious film, and it dealt with PTSD and revenge, where he was trying to, he just like preys on another family, just a random family. I don't know if that would have really worked that great, but.
Because this one's not I'm not saying those movies aren't wrong, but this one wasn't preachy. It was more of like a creature feature. Not a creature feature, but it was like if Universal Soldier, if Jean-Claude, like, because there's a thing where like, this is like Universal Soldier, if Jean-Claude Van Damme started to kill people once they found out who he was. Right? It's this, you know, it's a super soldier running amok. And I thought that was, I don't know, I dug it. Another question. Oh, what I really like that gunfight when Lance Reddick shows up with the gunman. And they almost ran out of bullets that day, which I think is pretty funny. They didn't have any blanks they were supposed to use.
But oh my gosh.
That opening scene with the laundry blowing in the wind.
And then he sees
the slow motion on him.
Oh, that was beautiful. And he drops the basket, pulls out the terrible, I don't know what gun it was. But then he just starts opening fire on them. And then he jumps into the house. And I was showing this movie, I showed it to my girlfriend like last week, 2 weeks ago. And I showed it to her. And she was just like, how did he survive all those bullets? Because that house is Swiss cheese. I was just like, well, you know, it's movie magic, you know? Like, not everything is real. But, like, everything with that scene, and just, like, the guy jumps in, pow, shoots the guy in the foot, then shoots him in the head. Oh, my Lord.
Very John Woo hard-boiled the killer type stuff, where he slides out from under the bed and headshots. And that's what they wanted. They're like, we wanted to do a slow motion John Woo moment. So why
that would have been great for them. They both pull guns on each other. That would have been
even, shooting at each other through the wall, like running together. A neat thing is the guy who did their production design is a really crafty dude. And a lot of the stuff they shot in the house, and then they shot that first, and then they redressed the house.
So what?
They
shot the shootout scene first.
Yeah, so then they could redress the house, so they didn't have to do it again. And that scene where he's running along the wall and they're shooting it up, they actually did that on a stage. Because the production designer's like, it's smarter to do that. We have this one long shot and we can control it with a dolly. So when you watch that scene along the wall, it's like a nice dolly shot.
Yeah.
So that's why it looked, because you couldn't do that in the house.
Absolutely not.
So I really thought that was a smart idea by the production designer just to do a really cool dolly shot on that wall. And when you watch it, you'll see that. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misinterpreted what you said. I thought you said they shot up the house and then they rebuilt the house.
Oh, no.
What?
They put fake walls in.
That's completely impractical.
Yeah, they put fake walls in. And then they shot all the fake walls and they took them out. Then they shot everything in that house because they didn't have a budget to build it all on stage. Because like Transcendence and everything were taking up everything.
God. Well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, but let's see. Also, another thing I want to talk about is the gun scene with Ethan Embry. So that guy looks at him and goes like, hey, man, I really appreciate what you do. He's like, well, you don't appreciate enough to join up.
And that's a great scene. And he's like, why don't you sign up?
Yeah, Joel David Moore from like Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
He's in it. But then, so he goes to buy guns from Ethan Embry. And I don't know if you've watched it, but Ethan Embry was in Cheap Thrills, one of my favorite movies from 2014.
I didn't. I remember you telling me about this.
Brilliant film.
He also did The Revenant. Not the one with Leonardo DiCaprio, but before that, there was a movie about a guy who, I think he's in Iraq or Afghanistan. He dies. He comes back as a zombie. it's scary, but at the same time, really good.
Huh.
He's also in that. That's a really good movie. And if you haven't seen that,
Devil's Candy too, which is on Netflix. I don't know if you watched.
I was gonna watch it. Actually.
He plays like a rocker painter in there with a lot of heart. So he's really doing a pretty great comeback. Not a comeback, but he's always been acting.
He's not. I mean, he was
Can't Hardly Wait and That Thing You Do and Empire Records. He was like the squirrely guy. Now he's become like the badass.
I never liked Empire Records.
Oh, really?
I never liked it. And that's what people don't understand when they say, why don't you like that? I'm like, because they already made that movie. It was called Clerks.
Yeah.
And it came out right before that one did. And then Empire Records came out and it was like, I couldn't do it. And then I remember at the time when it came out, people were going, what? This is Clerks. It's just a Kevin Smith ripoff. And of course, everybody now, it's been like, what, 2 decades? So everyone goes, oh my God, Empire Records, it's the coolest thing ever. You're like, no.
It's fun. I like watching it. Like, I like all the characters involved and I like Ethan Embry. I mean, it's very based in Clerks.
And yeah, it's in the Clerks world.
Not like Reservoir Dogs dialogue, but that kind of stylistic dialogue.
It was very much of the time where everybody was trying to rip off. I guess they call it homaging now, but at the time they were ripping off Tarantino and Kevin Smith because every movie that came out in the mid to late 90s was like that. I mean, you had, what was the movies? Love in a 45.
Oh, yeah.
What to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Oh, gosh.
Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
Yeah.
California.
Pool Hall Junkies.
Oh, gosh, I forgot about that movie.
Yeah.
But all those movies came out around the same time, and then they were like, we're going to need to do teenage angst movies, and because the 80s happened, and that was... That was Molly Ringwald and John Hughes. But now we have a new version, which is more grunge, and you know, now we got to do
Reality Bites.
Reality Bites. Well, they even had a TV show, 30 something.
Yeah.
Which, take it or leave it.
They had the show Flannel. But what I guess one thing I like about this movie is we actually, the podcast before this was, two before this was Quantum of Solace, and that's like my least favorite Bond film, but I like how there's no, like, there's no bits in it. And there's not, it's not like, there's no gimmicks in it. It's just straightforward. And I like this one too, because they could have tried to rip off Halloween or The Terminator.
There could have been a lot of scenes that could have homaged or ripped off.
Yeah, but this movie, scenes,
but it was very straight shooting.
I guess it does like to have the John Woo stuff, but it's a very straightforward movie.
Oh, yeah,
I like how it goes. It goes A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And I like that a lot. Like, they could have really made this much more stylish or much more showcasey, but it's not.
Yeah, and it's not showing off. It's very nitty gritty as well.
And I like that we were talking about this earlier. Leland Orser's in this movie.
Oh, gosh. He had a hell of a year. 2014 was so good for him. I mean, right after this came It Follows and then Faults.
Oh, with Leland in it?
Oh, I'm sorry. He was not in It Follows. The Gambler.
The
sorry,
Gambler.
My handwriting looks like a ransom note.
Help.
But he killed it. And then he did Taken 3 as well.
I mean, like, he was in all three Taken movies. He was in, like, 7, Daredevil, Taken, Saving Private Ryan, Berlin Station. Oh, that TV show Berlin Station. He was in Ray Donovan for a long time. The Gambler, 24, ER, Runaway Jury, Pearl Harbor, The Bone Collector, Alien Resurrection. So when I saw him in this, I've seen him. I've been watching him for 20 years. And I never knew who he was. I never knew his name. And so now I'm like, hey, Leland Orser. Like, and you know, in this movie, Maika was very serious. So she had to like kind of play this role. But they didn't really allow much improv on set because they wanted to keep the script tight and also the production moving fast. Because like improv can really hurt all that kind of stuff.
I can imagine that bar fight scene would be like 2 weeks long then.
Yeah. And yeah. So they let Leland kind of go off. And everyone's a little annoyed. They're like, why does Leland get to do this?
You're like, well, have you seen Faults?
Yeah.
Like, that's a great movie if I haven't seen it.
I just love that they kind of let him go off, Leland Orser, in this. I thought that was pretty neat.
He does have some great lines of dialogue, especially like when he's talking about, when he's like, when he comes home and the wife is like, well, honey, he's like, I don't care, I need a drink. It's like, it seems like he should have had like a different line of dialogue. Yeah. But he just kind of walks past her and like, it's like, you know, pump the brakes, honey. And just goes right to the booze and he's like, well, my boss died. It seems like there should have been something else there, but it was great.
I'd love to go visit him because he's always offering beer or whiskey to people. Like, it's like 9 o'clock in the morning. Hey, Mark, you want a beer? I'm on vacation, sure. So they just sit around drinking. Like, he's always just downing beers with people, like kind of hanging out. And he's not, you know, if you think about him as a dad, he's not that bad of a dad.
He's a very good provider, and he's very serious about like wanting to move forward with his career. Mm-hmm. The only thing that was stopping him was the 24-year-old with the college degree, and then David walks into their lives and who's the boss now?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of interesting. You really like these people, and at the end when David kind of switches, when people learn his identity and then he has to kill everyone,
you still kind of like him.
Yeah. But you also feel bad when he kills the mom. Like, the mom gets killed. She's super nice. And then Leland, they get into a car wreck with Leland, then he just shoots him in the chest. And you're like, what?
Yeah, like, why did he do that? And it's like, well, those were the loose ends.
Yeah, he knew his identity.
My girlfriend pointed out, she goes, did he really need to kill the mom? And I was like, well, he did. I mean, it's as terrible as that scene is, because he knifes her.
Yeah.
I mean, she gets the worst out of all of them. I mean, everybody gets shot. That's a quick death. I mean, she really has to sit there with this knife in her. And it's like, oh, come on. Like, why didn't you, like... But
could have made it quicker.
He could have done that. I mean, she was a likable person. She didn't do anything wrong. She wasn't like, she didn't make him go out and do anything. Like, she never said anything was wrong with her life.
I like the scenes where she's just chilling with Micah Monroe. Like, they come home and they're just sitting on the couch reading magazines together. Like, that's a cool touch. Like, it felt like a lived-in home.
Yeah, they looked like a real family. They acted like a real family.
Like, you know these movies, I don't want to hate on them, but like, you know, you have these broken families, but they never come across as a real family. They just come across as actors kind of playing a broken family.
No, I know what
you
mean.
Does that make sense?
No, that makes complete sense. Kind of like with Nip Tuck, where they the two characters, they become meth heads later on in the series. And it's like, I don't buy them as meth heads for one thing, because they're ridiculously gorgeous. And then And then they're like, we have a family together. And it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe that for a minute.
I want to do an article about the most ripped alcoholics of cinema. You have these characters who just...
Earl Flynn.
Yeah, or you have like, in that movie, The Meg, Jason Statham drinks 40 beers a day, but he's like ripped out of his mind. Or Daniel Wu in Tomb Raider.
Bill Paxton in Club Dread.
Yeah, in these in these fictional worlds, like they're still like really skinny, so they must drink super light beer, or their metabolisms in cinema are just unheard of.
Well, every time they do one curl, they're doing 50 sit-ups at the same time.
Push-up. For every beer, you have to do 50 push-ups and 50 sit-ups. Statham's just in the bar. I'll be right back.
I love the movie The Meg.
Yeah.
I saw it based off of your podcast, and I was like, oh my God, I got to see this movie.
Guts the shark.
I mean, like, name one movie where the shark comes flying out of the ocean with Jason Statham strapped to the nose, stabbing it in the eye, screaming at the same time.
Yeah.
You can't. So that means you have to see this movie.
What else did you want to touch? I know you had a couple other things you wanted to touch on this movie. Anything else that you wanted to cover?
Well, I mean, you know, 2014 was a really great year in general for these types of films. That kind of like sparked the whole art house horror films that we started to see, you know, with The Babadook. Then I think that came out shortly after or shortly before this. But it didn't hit America until after this movie came out.
Yeah, Babadook was 2014. The Sacrament was 2014. Then you had, Tusk. I actually love that movie, Tusk.
I was great with that movie until you see the monster. And I was like, I can't do it. Yeah. This movie was terrible. He's like, I was trying to do what Tarantino did. And it's like, but you're Kevin Smith. You don't have to be Tarantino.
Girl Walks Home Alone.
That movie was so good.
Dead Snow came out. Yeah, so 2014, Jezebel, 2014, and then it led into 2015. Oh, Housebound was 2014, 90%.
Yeah, that was a great horror comedy. I was not expecting to like that.
Starry Eyes in 2014. In 2015, that's like when movies, films, and flicks first hit big, because I caught on to the indie horror thing that was blowing up.
The art house horror started becoming an actual thing at that point, because they didn't, I guess, I'm assuming that no one really thought these were going to be hits. I mean, The Guest wasn't a hit at all. I mean, if you're looking at the box office, it was a $5 million budget and it grossed $332,000.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really, you know, they weren't really hits, but people started liking them after they got on streaming services, so they could now sell these. I think the first probably big hit was probably The Witch. Or Babadook may have been. I can't remember.
Yeah, that didn't get released in the theaters.
I saw it in the theaters, actually.
Oh, you saw Babadook?
They played it at the Plaza. Kind of a funny story. When it first came out, I was on a date with a girl, and it was our second date. And
she saw Babadook?
I took her to go see it because she said she wanted to go. Because I always talk about movies, so she said, well, let's go see a movie. And I was like, sure. I was like, this is the movie I want to see, The Babadook. And she was like, I don't like horror films, but it has a drama feel to it, so I'll see it anyways. As soon as we walked out of the theater, she goes, you know, don't take this to heart, but I'm not going to see you a third time.
Because, I mean, that movie's pretty much, it's just about a mother and her son and kind of coping.
I mean, think
and all
about
that.
It. It's really, yeah, it's a coping film. It's, I mean, it could be, you know, a lighthearted comedy if you think about it.
And then, also, What We Do in the Shadows was 2014. Bone Tomahawk was 2015. Also, you know, It Follows came out. That got a wide release. And then 2016 was The Witch. Creep was 2014. Backcountry was 2014. So this was the time where these movies were Goodnight Mommy 2014.
What did you think of Goodnight Mommy?
Stupid.
I was great up until you knew what the ending was. And it's like, oh, come on. Like, that's the big shock. And it's like, oh, come on. Yeah. We knew it from like but I mean, the close-up shots and the tension of like them cutting the mom. And I was like, okay, that was very well done. But I was like, okay, I bet that spoiler alert. I bet the kid's actually dead and mom has been beaten up before and now she's back and they're convincing themselves that this isn't mom. And it's like, oh, yep. Well, there you go. So
it was very well made, acted well, shot well.
They're really
production
proud of
design
that
was really well, but it just felt so stylish and kind of flat and artistic.
It was very much like, you know, people, they were showing off. They were like, look how slick and cool we can be. And it's like, they were really proud of that movie. It was a German film, right?
No, it was
Austrian.
Yeah, Austrian.
They were really proud of that movie, so much so that they actually put it in for the best foreign film for the Academy Awards. It's like, no surprise it didn't, like, go anywhere. But then again, you know, so did The Shape of Water won Best Picture, and Lord knows why.
Yeah. we'll look up for that. We did a podcast about it. Listen to the podcast, and then you can
The Shape of Water?
Yeah, I know. For we did one about Goodnight Mommy. on there so you can see what countries it's made. I don't want to research while we're
talking on this.
But this was like, this, you know, it follows at the theaters, which was 2016, I believe, or late 2015, The Witch. So this is really part of the kind of art house.
It was. This kind of like kickstarted it, was the whole thing. I mean, of course, Your Next came out first, but people didn't really like, they weren't really still into it because at that point in time with horror, is still very much like crisp and clear, which is what we wanted to see. I mean, look at the horror films from the early 2000s. We got the 90s where they were very nitty and gritty. Then you had the 2000s, which everything had to be sharp and polished.
There's a lot of remakes.
There was a lot of remakes.
As 70s and 80s were remade everything.
Oh, gosh. Like, the worst one I thought was When a Stranger Calls. I was like, that doesn't even... Why? That can't even be a thing. Like, that's... Even at the time, it was like, come on. Like, in the 70s, it makes sense because Star 69 didn't exist yet. But then when the 80s hit, you're like, this movie wouldn't even make sense anymore. And then, of course...
Then you make it in the 2000s.
And it's like, why?
Where's my cell phone? I lost my cell phone.
Doesn't make any sense. Like, oh, he has another chip. Like, oh, good, go.
I think Insidious really helped the low budget. Because that was 2010. That was made for $1 million. $1.25
million. That was beautifully made.
And it had Rose Byrne and Patrick Wilson in it. It had good casts. And then you had Ethan Hawke in Sinister. You had him in The Purge. You had, like, A-list actors in $1 million movies.
And like, kind of good for the rest of us, but not so great for them.
Who?
Rose Byrne and Ethan Hawke. And they can show their acting skills, so they could actually be in, like, lesser films that would not normally be starring them.
Rose Byrne has been acting straight for years. I think
I mean, like her career kind of, like, wasn't doing as good as it could have been. Like,
uh-huh.
I mean, you know, so then she had to take on movies, the lesser films, so she could take, like, a basic SAG rate, as opposed to getting, like, a couple mil for a movie. So, I mean, it was kind of, like, good for us, because then we can see these great actors, but...
And also these movies were only shot in 20 days, so they're kind of in and out, make a little bit of a paycheck, it's a back end.
Like,
make
what, a ton of money. Insidious?
Yeah, it was shot in 20 days.
Really?
Yeah, wow. 1.25 million, you can't...
Oh, yeah, you know, can't, like, really...
Yeah.
They probably did a lot of moving.
But, I mean, I guess with this movie, I just... 92% Rotten Tomatoes.
This movie.
And actually, you know, I've spoke about this before, but I felt like the movies that came out from 2014, 2015, 2016 felt like the movies from the 70s, like Rosemary's Baby, you know, these really, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Omen, these very smart art house movies. It was like horror being made by Ridley Scott, Roman Polanski. Like, it wasn't just horror made by Hammer or by Roger Corman or just kind of hokey Universal movies. I felt like A-list directors were tackling horror at the time, and then it became about slashers and everything. But now you have pretty big name directors doing horror.
Well, yeah, they want to take their no pun intended. They want to take a stab at it because it's becoming a new genre. Almost like it's not seen as, like, ridiculous as it used to be. Where it doesn't have to be Eli Roth. It can actually be a very smart, well put together film. It makes you think almost. I mean, kind of like The Babadook. Like, it does make you think. Like, what does grieving look like? And yeah, to some people, that's what it looks like.
Yeah,
like, it's a very smart film. You know, Ty West as well is the same way.
And plus, you can just shoot in a house. House of the Devil, Babadook, You're Next, Insidious.
Very cheap, very fastly made movies.
Shoot in
a house, and then that's it.
Yeah. Anything else you want to cover on this movie?
Well,
what do you got?
I mean, the soundtrack, I love that. The soundtrack is dominated by the band, or I don't know if you call them a band, but group Survive, who does the music for Stranger Things.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
They dominate the soundtrack on that. I mean, they didn't do the score, but they use a lot of their music. So, I mean, if you like that type of music, this definitely will be up your alley. Also, you know, Clan of the Zymox, as we also covered, and The Gatekeeper, who they all do the kind of like a weird, I don't know if you call it like a goth techno kind of put it, like gothic dance music. There used to be a goth dance club around the corner from me called The Shelter. I used to go to.
And you would lean all the line dances there, wouldn't you?
I went in there and I asked them to play Elvis one day.
Who's that?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, they sang. They banned me for life.
But wise men say only fools ask to play Elvis in a goth nightclub.
But every Saturday night, it was a $20 cover and all you could drink. So, I mean,
yeah.
Who's laughing now?
Did you ever say a little less conversation, a little more Elvis? A little less industrial music and a little more Elvis. I want to say this movie, I think, has my favorite ending line that I can think of. I like Swiss Army Man's final line, but I feel like they kind of ripped off this one. the final line in this movie is we're going to get our PG-13 is what the fuck? Because so this movie, like, and also I love that David comes in. He goes down to hunt Micah Monroe and Dr. Loomis. No, he goes to hunt the brother at the school. And that's why you have the fun house because he's in detention because he beat up a kid up. Oh, yeah.
That's a great scene whenever he's going when they're in the principal's office and he's like, what did he call? Because they're like,
hate crime.
They're both going to be expelled. And he's like, what did he call the boy again? He's like, wait, I don't know. And then he says the word and he's like, so then this would be a hate crime.
Yep.
Imagine what happens when it's broadcasted all over the news. And the principal's like, wait. Okay, so
30 days detention.
30 days detention. He's like, deal. So walks out and then shakes the kid's hand and then keeps on going.
And it works out organically that he's in a funhouse at the end because his job for detention was to clean up in that place and help build it. So it puts him in there. And then
of course, because like where else would they have taken it? Because if this didn't take place, like if it took place during like the Christmas dance, what kind of a fight scene would that be? That, you know.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I was just now thinking about that, like Frozen, but with the guest. Let it go.
There's silence for 30 seconds where we're just thinking about the movie. Oh man, that'd be great. But so I do like that Micah and her brother end up killing David. Or in quotation marks, killing. But I do like what David says. He's like, I'm proud of you. You did the right thing. I don't blame you. And he does the Terminator move with the thumbs up.
Yeah.
And then he does the thumbs up. He's like, don't feel bad. So he was going to kill them. But since they killed him, he doesn't have to kill them. Because that, you know, his programming is keeping them to killing them. And so he's kind
of... So now he can move on to the next killing.
He's almost happy that they kill him. Because he doesn't have to kill them. But I love it. He's like, I'm proud of you. Like, you did the right thing. I don't blame you. Like, and then the thumbs up. He has a blood coming down him. Don't feel bad.
Yeah.
Thumbs up. That's awesome. And then I love the cops are like, we found two bodies with no teeth and no fingers.
Yeah.
Like, right. Oh, he's still alive.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the first thing everybody says. But that's just fantastic. It's like that scene in, what was it, My Bloody Valentine. Whoop.
But I love it. He walks out at the end and he stares at Micah Monroe and... her brother, and she just looked. I love the way she said, "What the fuck?" She just nailed I can only say like five. What the f's? But the way she says it just works perfectly.
Yeah, like, it seems like natural. Like everyone's thinking that, so she's going to be the one who says it.
Yep.
And it's just like, huh?
It's not even stylish the way she says it. Like I think all of us would say that.
Like, oh yeah, it's like we were thinking it in our minds, but she says it exactly like how we were thinking it.
Yeah,
it's dynamite.
Nails that scene. I remember when I saw that movie, and then it just goes the guest. And you're like, I was watching that when I first saw that, and I heard her say that line. Then the guest, I was like, I love this movie. I just went and I bought it immediately. I bought that and the soundtrack right. Like I rented it, and then I went and bought the movie, and I bought the soundtrack just right then and there.
It was like your Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah. Well, that's what you did?
Saturday Night Fever?
Yeah.
Of course, everyone did.
Wait. Oh, bought the soundtrack?
Yeah.
Oh, so get this. I teach intro to film production, so basic camera work for students. And I taught them how to do not establishing shots, but like establishing shots and then like how to follow a character throughout a city. So I had them film their version of the Saturday Night Fever when John Travolta's walking through the town because
40 broken cameras later.
But he takes the train into town and then he's walking like through the street. So you see his entire journey to go to where he goes. So like, and then they have a really great establishing shot. So I have my students not dance, but learn how to do that by watching that clip from Saturday
Night Fever. I mean, that's a great clip. I mean, that whole movie is fantastic. No one likes disco anymore. At least no one I know. That movie in general is amazing, especially if you want to know what it's like to have been at that time. That's a great movie to show people for representation of the 70s disco scene in New York, very much like how other films will give a very solid representation of that era. If you want, like, Valley Girl, for instance, will show like how the early 80s, the Hollywood versus the Valley scene was. And movies like that, I love that because it's like a time capsule. You'll never be able to see stuff like, you'll never be able to see those scenes ever again. And they really signify it. Just like Clerks, like we mentioned, Clerks shows what it was like to be, you know, early 20s, maybe going to college in the 90s. And it's not stylized. It's very much, this is what it was like. I mean, you were working at a gas station.
You weren't even supposed to be there.
Not even supposed to be there.
I would show Staying Alive, the sequel.
Oh,
gosh. Or for the 90s, I'd show Biodome as a representation of the 90s. I think that really captures the zeitgeist of that.
I'd show them Chairman of the Board so they know what it was like to... I love that
I saw him once in an airport, and that dude's jacked.
He's huge. I saw him, what movie was it
that
I do?
I didn't say anything. I didn't look. But I was like, my brother and I were...
He's a big guy. He's like 6'2", 6'3". He's a big man.
Yeah,
he was, and he's also very, very muscular. And it's like, how the...
That threw me off seeing it, because I was like, geez Louise.
Used to seeing this like scrawny beanpole guy, and it's like, holy crap.
He was doing push-ups. He was just walking on his hands.
He was eating a turkey sandwich. And
this protein. But no, I'm really happy you joined me for this. I love this movie, and I think we pretty much tackled everything we had to tackle about it. What do you think?
Yeah, it was nice.
So before we end, you have some movie recommendations for us, don't you?
I do. There's a couple of films that I've seen on that are streaming on Netflix that kind of go along with the guest. They're a little fun and very straight to the point. One of them was Beyond the Gates, which if you haven't seen that, that's a great movie about a man who mysteriously dies. He has a like a video rental house. He wills it to his sons. His sons then investigate a little bit, and they discover a box that was like a VHS board game. If you remember those, playing those back in the day. This one's called Beyond the Gates. They start to play it, and they start to discover more about their father's death, about how he got wrapped up in this game. And it seems like it would be serious, but it's actually not. It's very slapstick, kind of goofy, but also really kind of fun to watch.
Beyond the Gates.
Beyond the Gates. It is streaming on Netflix. Strongly recommend watching that.
Awesome.
Another one is called They're Watching, if you haven't seen that. That's a great movie as well. It's about like there's a haunted house, I guess you would say, that's in Eastern Europe. That someone, I think they're from America, they buy and they're like, oh my gosh, honey, we can live in Eastern Europe now. This is so great. So then they redesign everything. So then a house hunter's place comes out. You know, like one of those trading spaces places that come in there to like do a documentary on it. And they start like seeing that the people in the town are really kind of off. Not like weird, but they kind of chalk it up to like, oh, well, it's just local customs. That's just how they are. But these people are just really, really weird. So they start thinking about like, you know, well, why are we here? Like, what's going on here? Is this even an actual thing? Because it doesn't look like you're really renovating this house. And I don't know what's happening. And whether or not they're a cult or witches or what's going on, it all kind of leads up to this really, really, really great ending. So I strongly recommend it. That's really slapstick film as well.
So in the movie, I'm not saying... Eastern Europe's perfectly fine in the real world, but I feel like in the horror world, to buy a former fun house in Eastern Europe...
Oh, it's not like a haunted house. Oh. I mean, like, it's kind of like your house, but it's like... It's haunted, quotes, haunted.
Oh, so they buy a haunted house in Eastern Europe?
Well, that's what they think. I mean, that's what they say it is, and they're like, we're going to redecorate. It's really cool. It's a very neat,
it just spells doom, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, the things don't work out for anyone in the movie.
Fictional world. It's just like, you're dead.
it's a really fun movie.
Awesome.
Another one, which is streaming on Showtime right now, is called Urban Myths. This is more of true, they call it true-ish, retellings of classic events. Kind of like how Gus Van Sant based his career on, where he wanted to do true stories of stuff that you could never... really know the facts of, which is the reason
like why. Elephant.
Exactly. He wanted
Jerry,
to do
a, Last Days.
That was based on obviously Columbine, and he wanted to do a movie called Columbine, but the producer said, there's no way we're going to make that movie, but you can do Elephant. And same thing with Last Days. They're like, we're not going to do a Kurt Cobain movie, but we will do Last Days, which is all very heavily influenced about Kurt Cobain's Last Days.
Oh, for sure.
So Urban Myths is kind of based on that same line. It's a lot of stories that they can't really tell what actually happened, but they're going to retell the story anyways. One of them that I watched that I really liked was the Sex Pistols on Bill Grundy, who, if you know who Bill Grundy was, he was like the name in talk shows back in London back in the day, back in the 70s. And the Sex Pistols were on his show. And Sex Pistols didn't, I don't think they released their first record yet. So they were on there and they just totally destroyed the show. And it actually got Bill Grundy fired.
Oh, wow. Cool. Urban Myths on Showtime?
Yeah, it's a great show. I'm strongly recommending it. There's a lot of good ones on there. They're not very long, so they only do a very small segment. So if they did a show about like, you know, Mark going to set, but something happened along the way, it would just be about that. It wouldn't be like the whole story of it. It would just be
a fist fight with a tiger.
it's a great show. I very strongly recommend watching it.
Awesome. Urban Myths, and one more?
Nope, that's it.
That's it?
That's it.
Oh, man. If You have three right here. Which one should they tackle first?
I would say, to go along with the guest, I would say check out Beyond the Gates.
Beyond the Gates. Do that. And one good thing we learned is to never buy a haunted house in Eastern Europe. What do you think?
I'm not going to do it anytime soon.
I mean, the real...
I have to check out my Zillow.
Yeah. in this world, I'd consider it. But in the if I knew I was in a movie, and this was a meta movie, I'd be out.
I don't know. Maybe. Probably not. It depends on who is going to come and visit me. I don't know. There's some great scenes in that movie, especially like with the local people, and they're just like, hey, what are you doing here?
I'll add the...
opens up the...
I'll add the trailer to the movie post. So if you don't want to just Google it, you can go to Movies, Films, and Flicks, and you can see the trailers for all three of these on the post, if you're listening. Make it easy for you, so you don't have to go to YouTube.
Excellent.
And you can give us more views on our site. So hey, thank you so much, man. This was a lot of fun. I had a good time talking about guests. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and for Chris Kelly, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week. Bye.